Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, July 1st, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we have an open line Monday. We're going to have an open line Monday because it was a long weekend. We have a number of things that we may want to hash out, that you may want to hash out. There's one particular thing I do want to hash out, and I will have Aaron read that article shortly because there was a traffic accident and a ruling that has me uneasy, bothered, unhappy. But I wanted to conclude with the conversation we were having about the task force. What is the correct name for the task force?
Maritime Revenue Enhancement
and
Task Force.
On the other show, Aaron Green's show on the clock, right? The caller called and questioned whether the question the legality of the task force. And the legality of the task force is not in question. The idea is it is a task force that we understand, we appreciate they are collecting government revenue and monies, and it was put together to do a particular task. So I don't question the legality of it. I question the operation, or actually not even the operation, how it is being conducted in terms of this military system. I'm cool with NIB coming to your job and asking for the money. I'm cool with that. I'm included with whatever revenue services coming to your job and asking for the money. I'm cool with that. What I'm not cool with is asking for cash. And what is his title? The Defense Force Officer, the military man. He's Commander. Go back to the article.
Commander Bertram Boleg.
Commander Bertram Boleg said the reason for his guns, artillery, is because they're collecting cash. That don't make sense to me, because the tax place does not collect tax.
They don't accept cash.
It doesn't accept cash. That's what I mean. It's a cashless environment. So I can't see you collecting cash knowing that the place does not accept cash or collect cash. So I think that he might have misspoken there, right? And then the goal was to explain why he has weapons or whatever it is. The police has weapons or whatever it is. But I'm just saying that they ain't supposed to be collecting no cash.
You know, I think a part of the problem is this. I think a part of the problem is that when people are authorized to do something, right? So when they're given powers to do something, the powers over people, powers to operate in a particular way, it appears as if people in power, this culture that we have, when the king touch you with the sword and you're given your powers, then you become all powerful. And the rules you don't even have to follow the rules, right? We don't understand that your power is vested in the rules, right? That without the rules, you don't have the authority that you want to operate with. That the one and the other, you can't operate separately. Your power is non-existent if you are not following the regulations or the rules that your authority is vested in.
And I want to also mention that a task force is made up of inland revenue. So inland revenue employees will be there, right? It's made up of NIB, and NIB employees will be there. It's made up of immigration. Immigration employees will be there, and it made up of customs. All of that makes up this task force, right?
Right.
And all of them working in concert, doing their independent job.
Hold on,
so that's why it's a legal entity.
Here's my thing. We talk about critiquing the operation of the task force or the composition in terms of the authority of the task force. Customs officers are authorized to carry weapons. Why did we need an extra force coming in with weapons if customs officers are authorized to carry weapons? Immigration officers are also authorized at some point, not all, to carry weapons. Why did you need the Defense Force to come in with weapons if both Customs and Immigration have the authority at some point to carry weapons?
We are not sure who was carrying the weapon.
See, that's another issue. If you're going to come in with weapons, then, like, you know, the police, there's the police are supposed to wear their number. They're supposed to display it. It should always be visible to the public if they are on duty. It's a part of the procedure, yeah. Right?
The customs officer was wearing customs uniform. NIB was wearing NIB uniform.
But were you able to identify which agency the individuals who were carrying the guns were from or were with?
And we'll interrogate that and try find out in the future.
It doesn't. I don't need to know that for the purpose of the conversation. The point that I'm making is that any officer in his official capacity as a representative of the state that's in an operation and carrying a weapon, right? Unless it's a raid.
It wasn't a raid.
Then their agency or their individual identification information should be displayed on their uniform. I don't know who is pointing a gun at me.
But we definitely, in the video we saw.
Were they wearing face masks?
No.
Officers, because you know sometimes officers with the high-powered weapons like to wear masks that cover your entire face. I don't know why you have the authority of the state behind you. Why you have to hide your face?
It's a military thing. Let's go to the call-up because I want to move on to the next topic also. And I know you have one or two things.
I know you want to move on. I just want to say when you say it's a military thing, you know, military has procedures that have to be followed.
And all of us wear masks.
The
military wear masks. Go ahead, caller. Producer Patrick, call it through. Oh, you sound there. Let's do that myself. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning. How are you, CJ and Aaron?
Good, thank you.
I am, again, this task force is very interesting. And I just want to say something about it. Again, I say that the chairman of the task force and the good officer is lying.
No, you can't say that.
I'm going to be careful with that.
But you didn't say it. Be careful.
Let me pull it back.
That's good.
He may have spoken a mistruth, exaggerated. Firstly, if someone visited my business with the purpose of an inspection of something, that's a purpose that does not require anyone other than the person doing the inspection. Let's not get to anything yet. Let's not put anything else on that. An inspection. So now once you would have inspected something, you then have to find that whatever you inspected is not in working order as it should be. Even if that is the case, the next step is you alert me of the irregularity. After that, I then may have an opportunity to talk to you, respond to you, or XYZ. So that's the first purpose. But it's the second purpose, which was not stated in the particular raid which I'm referring to, was to then collect something and then you need protection for the collection, then the first purpose was either false or overstated is what my suggestion is. And that's where my original statement was. You're either doing inspections or you're either doing collection. Which one is it?
I hear your critique.
You know what I'm saying.
Yes, I hear your critique. And what I'll say to that, my response for that, those businesses who feel aggrieved have options on what they can do. And that solved that.
That's the final thing I'm going to say before I hang up. The businesses could invite the person to inspect if they're ready. But if I'm not ready for an inspection, you can come back at some other time, but I'm just not prepared to be inspected at this point in time. And the last time I checked, the law regarding the VADA and the Business License Act, it does not demand any payment on the site at all. So if they can find me the place where it says that, then I would suggest businesses conduct their business with the VAT department as they've been doing so since 2014.
And I appreciate your call. And that's something that we need to consider and something that needs to be debated and hashed out and fleshed out, right?
Not debated. Follow the law.
Okay. That's good. So this is one of the stories I wanted to read because this bothered me, right? Because the case, this is, it was an appeal. So the perpetrator was found guilty, and they made an appeal. And I wanted the listening audience to hear what happened, right? Because I feel aggrieved because I'm not happy. I'm not happy by it. But I wanted us to hear exactly what happened, right? So, Aaron, can you read that for me, please?
So the article is vehicular manslaughter sentence reduced on appeal. It is on page A3 of today's Nassau Guardian, July the 1st, 2024. A hit-and-run driver who mowed down a pedestrian and failed to stop had her sentence reduced on appeal last week. Altonese Rolls lawyer Glendon Roll convinced the appellate court that the sentence of 3 years and 6 months and a $20,000 compensation order was too harsh. The court reduced the sentence to 2 years and halved the compensation order. In May 2023, Roll pleaded guilty to vehicular manslaughter in the February 14, 2022 death of Sandy Roll. He was mowed down while walking along JFK Drive at 1:40 a.m., Roll's car needed repairs, and he was walking to work. Prior to the collision, the convict attended several sporting bars where she had several drinks. The convict told police she was getting drowsy and asked a friend to stay on the phone with her to keep her awake. She said that she dozed off and felt her car hit something. After the impact, she noticed that the windshield of her vehicle had caved in. Nonetheless, Roll failed to remain at the scene of the incident and continued driving her damaged car to her friend's home. When she arrived, she took a shower and the following morning had the vehicle towed to her father's home. Roll surrendered to the traffic police station on February 17, 2022, 3 days after the collision. Roll shouldn't have been behind the wheel as she didn't have a driver's license nor a learner's permit. Additionally, the car was unlicensed and uninsured. Mr. Nuri, why you caused me read this story this morning?
Because it needed to be fleshed out.
Absolutely.
I needed the listening audience to hear it. Well, first of all, let's go to this. She had no license.
Not even a learner's permit.
Driver's permit or learner's permit. The car itself
was unlicensed.
Was unlicensed.
And uninsured.
And uninsured. So she's just... Then she was drinking, right? She was drinking and she went to several parties.
Several sporting bars where she had several drinks is what the article says.
I don't even call her drunk. I just can say she's drinking, right? She decided to drive home, but she felt fatigued. Tired, and she did not stop. She decided to drive home. And she know that she hit something because she fell asleep. She fell asleep at the wheel and she hit something. But instead of stopping, checking, looking, she drove home, right? She was on her phone talking while she's driving a car, right? She drove home, took a shower.
Went to sleep.
Gone to sleep, right? Leave the scene of the accident. Then have her car towed to be
fixed. She knows she couldn't drive it.
Right? That's how hard she hit whatever she hit, right? And 3 days later, after people report that man dead on the road, she came and turned herself in. Then she pled guilty. She pled guilty and she was sentenced. She was sentenced for 3 years.
And $20,000 compensation.
And to pay $20,000 to the man's family because she killed him. And then she made an appeal and said that 3 years is too much. Paying that man $20,000.
Man's family, because he is dead now.
Paying the man's family $20,000. Too much for them. She appealed and said, I need it to be lessened. So it was lessened to 2 years. And they didn't even say how much they lowered the money to. I mean, how much for a person's life? Can't even walk on the side of the road.
I'm just looking forward again. I think the court reduced the sentence to 2 years and halved the compensation order. So the courts took a year and a half off of the sentence and then took $10,000 off of the compensation order. I just want to say that blowing your horn at a driver that is reckless or likely to be engaged in reckless behavior is not as bad as being reckless and engaging in reckless behavior. Somebody who blows their horn at you because you are on your cell phone while driving is not the same thing as you being on your cell phone while driving. Also, I want you all to note, Mr. Nuri, when you say you didn't get drunk, we don't charge people with drunk driving. We charge them with driving under the influence. You don't have to be lit. You don't have to be obviously and visually intoxicated to fall within the penalty, right? To fall within the limit. You are just intoxicated. You have too much alcohol in your system. So it's not about, oh, I lit, I drunk, I can't drive. It is sufficient alcohol to impair your capacity to drive your car properly. It impairs your capacity to be aware of what's happening around you 360 degrees.
I just wanted to
put that on the record.
I know Erin has one or two things she wants to read. I need to see which one.
Well, listen, I get one text here.
One text?
The text says, "Morning, Miss Green. When are we going to get updated from last year's independence? Jack Thompson."
What's the last
one? It's the next one. You have not said how much it costs yet. I haven't said how much it costs yet because I don't know, but somebody else asked. It ain't just me. And it's not just the texter.
You all keep on asking.
But let me tell you, it's somebody who have stripes asking now. Not just me. Okay. I ain't got no stripes. "Lack of transparency on independence costs." That's 28th of June, Nassau Tribune. "As a new round of Independence Day celebrations nears, the cost of last year's festivities is still unknown. Press Secretary Keishla Adley could not provide information during the Office of the Prime Minister's press briefing." Full stop. Earlier this week, Leslia Bryce, Her Excellency, former chair of the Bahamas Independence Secretariat, said she did not know.
It's not her job to know.
It is her job to know.
Jack Thompson was supposed to
be. It is her job to know.
No, they were to give the report to her.
She is the chair of the committee.
Yeah, but it's not her.
It is her job to know.
Whose job is to table it?
It is her. Oh, she go into the house. Jack, don't go into the house. She goes into the house.
Jack came and said that he will table
they
it.
They are co-chairs. They hold equal responsibility. And since she's the one that has Her Excellency behind her name, integrity warrants that she take the lead. And the buck stops with her. But let me read.
We all know that Mr. Jack Thompson said that he came to the public and said he will give the information to the public.
Her Excellency operates with integrity and understands that the buck stops with her, and I'm sure that we will not have this type of commentary from her again. Leslia Bryce, former chair of the Bahamas Independent Secretariat, said she did not know and referred the Tribune to Jack Thompson, the permanent secretary. Just because she referred him doesn't mean that that's where they're supposed to go, sir. The permanent secretary to Government House, who could not be reached. Free National Movement Chairman Dr. Dwayne Sands criticized the Davis administration for lacking transparency over such matters. Organizers of last year's 50th anniversary have consistently given excuses when pressed on the costs of the elaborate celebrations. A total of $5.2 million was budgeted for the celebrations in the 2022 to 2023 budget. When St. Anne's MP Adrian White asked why the Cabinet Office budget for ceremonial events increased from $750,000 to $5.2 million, Deputy Prime Minister Chester Cooper said the independence anniversary would be a, quote, big, big deal for us, and we are going to celebrate it thoroughly, close quotes. Dr. Sands said spending taxpayers' monies without giving account is the norm for the Davis administration. He said this administration has gone to great pains to frustrate, to obstruct the work of the Public Accounts Committee because they do not wish for the Bahamian public to understand how the money of the country is being spent. And so I doubt that you're going to get anything more than rough figures, estimates, guesstimates, whether you're talking about the Bahama Games, whether you're talking about the independence celebrations, junk or new. It doesn't matter. You're not going to get accurate numbers. This year's events will include a National Flag Day, a beat retreat, they save money there by missing out an independence church service, an ecumenical service, and a cultural show, among other things. Have you picked up your 50th Golden Jubilee, 50th Independence Celebrations commemorative booklet?
The one by June's communication?
The one by the Independence Secretariat.
They had one of those?
No.
They didn't have one of those?
No.
Okay.
$5.2 million. We didn't even get a commemorative booklet from the state.
Yeah, but we know they spent it on things, so they spent it on us.
No, they didn't spend it on us.
Who did they spend it on?
Themselves. The political class had a great time.
You didn't, because you didn't go out.
First of all, no.
I went out.
Good.
Did
you enjoy your rice and steak?
No, I didn't get no rice and steak.
Did they run out before your plate came?
I didn't get no invitation to come to that.
Oh.
But I got my free bag.
You did?
Yeah, man.
Where were they giving them out?
I saw Miss Bryce giving them out at the roundabout. I stopped and get one or two of those.
In the traffic?
In the traffic.
Obstructing traffic.
I mean, I just slowed down. It was like a complete stop. And then I got one when I was, they had food there too. I got conch salad and I got some Benny cake. When so they had it by the old City Market.
You didn't get a commemorative booklet, coffee table book. You didn't even get like a commemorative collection on CD documenting the last 50 years of successes and advancements in the public service, in sports, in arts and culture, in professional spaces like the legal community, in the medical community. You didn't get anything like that. You didn't get a commemorative booklet highlighting advancements of the archipelago and the Family Islands. You didn't get anything that talked about a cohesive conversation about the way forward. We did get a return. We did get a conversation about the return to idealism by a man who refused to answer the first question, which is how you define idealism. He started the conversation by refusing to define the central term of the discussion. And I thought that was the most apropos moment of the entire Golden Jubilee celebration.
Anyway, I got a hat. Let's go. I got a hat.
Western Air suspends flights to New Bite. This is Friday, the 28th of June, Nassau Guardian. Western Air announced yesterday it has temporarily suspended flights to and from New Bite Cat Island due to unsafe runway conditions. The flights will remain suspended until adequate repair of the runway has been completed, the airline said. Quote, while our flight crews have carefully navigated the rough conditions of the New Bite runway for years, in recent days, the New Bite runway has deteriorated to a hazardous state with large potholes, severely uneven surfaces, and loose debris, which can be ingested by jet engines. Western Air said, quote, the runway in its state is no longer suitable for the operations of jet aircraft such as the ERJ-145, which we operate, mainly due to the broken pieces of asphalt scattered on the runway. These conditions have already resulted in previous damage to an aircraft earlier this month and prevented the departure of today's Flight 401 from Cat Island with passengers. While acknowledging that this is a, quote, great inconvenience, close quote, to passengers, Western Air apologized and said, safety must be our first priority, close quotes. The airline informed it has been in continuous contact with representatives of the airport authority, which advised it is working on a temporary solution for the runway. Western Air said, quote, we are standing by ready to resume flights as soon as it is possible, as we are committed to fulfilling our daily flight schedule into Cat Island. Close quotes. The state of the New Bite Airport has long been a concern. In April, Prime Minister Philip Davis, the parliamentary representative for Cat Island, said work was progressing well on the airport despite some challenges in sourcing construction materials. The work is expected to cost between $8 million and $10 million. During the budget debate in Parliament earlier this month, Deputy Prime Minister, who is that? Sorry, your Minister of Tourism, Aviation and Investments, Chester Cooper, the MP for Exuma, the minister responsible for aviation said airports throughout the islands are being redeveloped. The government's Family Islands Renaissance Project aims to develop 14 airports across Grand Bahama and the Family Islands, Cooper reported. We're building a new terminal at the New Bite and expanding the runway. The airside will be mobilized by February of next year, and the landside work has already been mobilized. Mr. Newry.
I listen.
Remember we were dissecting and interrogating a story about the government acquiring an airplane?
$2.5 million airplane?
$2.5 million worth of airplane.
Refurbishment.
And refurbishment. And all kinds of questions. We're still not sure what the story is. Is it the police's airplane and then government personnel can borrow it? Is it a politician's airplane and then government personnel and the police could use it when they're ready? We're still not 1,000% certain, but here's one thing I'm certain about.
Mm-hmm. What are you certain about?
I now want to ask the question, has the government rushed to purchase a plane because they cannot force commercial service providers to use the substandard conditions in the Family Islands?
I will ask another question, Aaron. Yeah. Would all airlines fly in and out of Cat Island at this point? When I say commercial airlines, I know Bahamas Air don't go there. And I always thought it would have been Western Air. And now we know that Western Air doesn't go there.
No. Western Air goes there. They said, and they're ready to go back as soon as they fix the...
We ain't fixed the airport right now. So what that means?
Well, I tell you what. I don't know how many flights, but I found this article. I found these stories, and I wanted to touch on them just briefly. Do you remember the Mayaguana aviation incident of 2013?
I think some people, that's when they had the people come and put their car on the
runway
so people could see.
So there was an emergency flight. There was someone who was ill. There was an emergency flight coming into Mayaguana at night. The residents who had at that point lived without runway lights for a considerable amount of time had begun the practice of using vehicles, cars, and their lighting system to provide lights for planes attempting to land at night. And so I'm going to read briefly from two articles. I found a Guardian article. Unfortunately, the article, I found it through Bahamas Local because this article is no longer available on the Guardian website. I may not have captured the entirety of this article. I didn't even get the headline for the article. But it's a Nassau Guardian article from the 5th of April, 2013. The mother, sister, and brother-in-law of former Cabinet Minister Sidney Colley were killed early yesterday when a plane crashed into their truck on the runway at the Mayaguana Airport. Police said they were inside one of two trucks that were using their high beams to guide the nine-seater plane onto the runway, a long-standing practice at the airport at night. The two trucks were stationed on either side of the runway to light the plane's path, as the airport has no lighting. I'm going to take a quote from this article, Colley's, from former Cabinet Minister Sidney Colley. Now, let me just say this. We're talking about what was a tragic incident. We're talking about an incident that was tragic to a particular family. Former Cabinet Minister Sidney Colley lost three members of his family in this accident, right? And so we are speaking, we are talking to it with care, sensitivity, and hopefully with grace. Sidney Colley is quoted as saying this: the two trucks were lined too close to the runway. And I just want to stick a pin there. I'm going to say this because ultimately Sidney Colley bared the brunt of this tragedy. Okay? He bared the brunt of this. Dear sir, the truck shouldn't have been on the runway at all. Okay? Don't ever find yourself in this position again to say, well, the two trucks were lying too close to the runway. The residents and citizens of Mayaguana should not have been forced to use trucks to provide lights for the runway. And the government, being aware of the lack of action or follow through on whatever contractual obligations that the I Group had with the government, should have done what they pledged to do after the accident long time. We have a quote from the minister responsible, Glenys Hannah Martin. She said it was too early to say what caused the accident. When asked if anyone will be held accountable for the crash, she said, quote, it depends on what the facts are. The facts are, madam, that y'all knew that things weren't things. You knew that you had people in Mayaguana living like they're in the bush. It depends on what the facts are, close quote. She pledged that her ministry would immediately intervene to ensure that emergency lighting is placed at the runway at Mayaguana's airport, as well as airports in Stella Maris, Long Island, and Fresh Creek, Andrus. The Mayaguana, I'm going to read from another article, three die in Mayaguana plane crash. This is from the Bahama Journal, the 5th of April, 2013. Minister of Transport Glenys Hannah Martin issued a statement on the crash, after which she left New Providence to travel to Mayaguana along with MICAL MP V. Alfred Gray. She added that the government is committed to ensuring the emergency capacity is installed in all airports nationwide. Quote, as a result of this commitment and under my tenure as transport minister between 2002 and 2007, solar-powered emergency runway lights were installed at 17 Family Island airports. She goes on to say this policy initiative eliminated the need for the use of high beam headlights from vehicles to illuminate Family Island airport runways in emergency situations. The Mayaguana Airport is the subject of a heads of agreement with the I Group, a foreign development group which, under that agreement, were obliged to rehabilitate the airport inclusive of lights and runway surfacing. That agreement was reviewed by the previous administration for several years, and it was only until February 2012 that a revised agreement was finalized between the former government and the I Group. She said, as a result of this terrible turn of events, the Ministry of Transport is now intervening to procure the immediate installation of emergency lights in Mayaguana. Full stop.
Did that happen?
I have no idea. What I do know is the last image I've seen from Mayaguana, it had 2 inches of water covering the floor of the airport. You remember the movie Jumanji?
Yeah.
Mayaguana Airport looked like y'all just played Jumanji in there.
Did the I group, whatever happened to the I group?
I don't know.
Nobody knows. Let's go to the caller here. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yeah, boy, y'all take long. But anyhow, I want to comment on that accident that the young gentleman got it killed going away. Until we get serious in this country, and it happens to somebody big, that's all I can say. Then we can get serious. Yeah, there's a girl driving with all the laws on the traffic book was broken. Now that young man, that gentleman got killed, he may have young children, they ain't got no daddy no more, nobody provide. And to me, that's a slap on the wrist. Until we send a message across that you cannot be driving uninsured car, unlicensed cars, particularly uninsured cars, on this road, ain't nothing gonna change. People can still be doing it. You know, it's killing them because of they ain't driving. Are you only giving that, what, you give a tree, then you cut it down to 2?
3.5, that cut it down to 2.
That should not be. That sentence was too lenient.
Thank you, caller.
Thank you very much,
caller. We need to get serious. If we don't get serious, like I say, they ain't get serious until it happens to somebody big. It's a big guy, at least for 5 years in jail. And then people will stop driving on insured cars on the road.
Stop driving with their cell phone in their hand. Stop trying to roll their joint while they're driving away from the weed man yard. It's just recklessness at all levels.
What is $10,000? You know? And just say that gentleman, maybe you have one child, 5, 6 years old. What is $10,000 can do? Those children like change forever. But anyhow, I think that's too lenient. We have to get their seats in this country.
Well, let's start by writing our MPs and letting them know that we think that we need a review of some of these laws and penalties.
We're going to take a quick commercial break now, then go to the text. But I want to ask you before, and I even come back with it. Did you watch the U.S. presidential debate?
Yes, I did.
Wasn't that entertaining? I want to talk about that briefly also. So we run through the text and then hear some commentary, because I want to know, what does that mean for us in watching the two candidates debate? What does that mean for us in the Bahamas? Mm-hmm. That's a conversation we need to start having as a country.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, it's Guided Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Of course, Erin Green was with me. She read like crazy. We'll be right back.
We can talk about Beryl.
You can talk about Beryl?
Yeah. On this other side.
Oh, okay.
Productions presents Papa Joe's Cafe. Watch Joe, the cafe owner, grapple with the grief and chaos of daily life. Surrounded by nosy cooks, a mouthy waitress, and a parade of lively characters. With themes of political satire, romance, and betrayal, this is a story you won't want to miss. Join us for an unforgettable stage play at the Performing Arts Center at UB on July 12th and 13th.
You try to rest, roll with the best. For all your printing needs, there ain't no one better, no. For posters and banners, magazines and flyers. For window decals, greeting cards and newsletters. No job too big and there's no job too small. You name it, we can print it, just give us a call. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located at the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guided Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri. Erin Green is with me. I see someone's on the caller, and we have some text we need to run through quickly. Let's go with this caller here. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Call girl once.
One second.
Hello.
Go ahead, caller. You're alive.
Can you take me off air, please? I didn't ask to be on air.
Okay, then.
We apologize, ma'am. That tends to happen when you call
the live line.
Next time, call 302-2300. 302-2300. If you don't want to be on air, for those who want to join the conversation, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, 242-300-5720 for Family Island residents generally, but specifically for Family Island residents who want to throw a blow for Clay Sweden because things looking rough in the Ministry of Works.
Leave Clay Sweden alone. Okay, let's talk quickly about the presidential, and then we go to the text, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I am concerned.
About what?
The two candidates they have leading, the Democratic candidate and the Republican candidate.
What concerns you?
It concerns me because I believe this is the best of the United States right there.
That's what you believe?
I believe. That's what they put forward. That means the best. That's the best what they have offered. And I need, we as behemoths need to appreciate, what does that mean for us as a country being next door in terms of policies? Whose policies best suits us? How do we lobby, right? What should be happening, right? We know that the former president, Trump, made some announcement like during the hurricane was? Dorian. When he said that there's some unscrupulous people living inside the Bahamas.
He wasn't talking about Americans, eh?
I don't know.
You know the little viral video where the little girl say, "Daddy, talk about yourself. Focus on yourself, Daddy." Maybe he's talking about America.
I'm just concerned that
just saying, maybe.
No one paid attention to us. You know? I'm concerned on who should become president of the United States.
Well, I tell you what concerned me. What concerned me was the panic by Democrats.
You think they should have been in panic?
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. What concerned me is the panic and how it manifested on the areas. But here's what I found fascinating. I'll be honest with you, I didn't plan on watching the debate. I didn't watch the debate. But I walked in on some post-debate commentary and then I got stuck to it, right? Mm. Somebody's have the TV in the house stuck on MSNBC. And I saw what I thought was the most savvy and strategic PR move ever.
Mm.
So Biden has faltered. Democrats are concerned. I mean, Democrats were very concerned. Very rarely do you hear Democrats talking about Biden in that way. But here's what they did. They sent a governor. It may have been the governor of Georgia.
Yes.
Tall white man.
Yes, one who would say stick on the topic.
Right, he would say stick on topic, right? They sent him out. The guy looks like he could have been Biden 30 years ago. Right? It's Biden 30 years ago, right? And I realized that the Democrats realized that they needed to do something quickly. And so what they presented to the Americans primarily, the larger world generally, is who they wished Biden was on the stage. And I think they imagined that if they let this boy speak for a good 30 minutes, that Americans would just pretend that that is Biden, right? Like they would sit there in their sort of depression that look at the state of Biden, but putting this gentleman in their face with all of these policy points and strong defense of the Democratic platform and Biden himself.
See, stick to policy.
Is just like Biden. That's who they wanted Biden to be on that stage. And I thought it was the most savvy piece of political PR I have ever seen.
But was sticking to policy enough after watching the debate where you could see the Democrats faltered in terms of their confidence? They got sad. But I remember the gentleman said, stick to the policies. This is why.
But the illusion fell. The curtain dropped. It was at that point impossible to maintain this illusion that Joe Biden is the Joe Biden that began the Obama presidency as vice president.
But let's pivot. Because I want to bring it home to Bahamas. Should we in the Bahamas have prime ministerial debate? Because let me get set up more.
No.
Can Philip Davis debate a Michael Pintad? And do they risk that?
They should.
They should risk it?
But we're not calling them prime ministerial debates because that's not how our system works. That's not how the Westminster system works. So we can't call them.
So what would you call it?
We call them debates, political debates, election debates.
Okay. semantics.
Where the leaders of the party debate each other. And that is how they should be described. Mm-hmm. Leaders of the party. A leaders debate, but not a prime ministerial debate, because we don't vote for... It's not semantics.
Yeah, but let me move from that point. That's my point.
Okay, no problem. Here's what concerns me is that we adopt and absorb American culture unconsciously, including political culture. My concern is that having Trump and Biden continue as the candidates, run for POTUS, President of the United States of America, that may prompt, if not Davis himself, but those that depend on Davis's leadership for their political and economic survival, may prompt them to think that we too can tolerate. Now, I don't mean like us Bahamians and what we could eat, because apparently y'all think we could eat all manner of dirt and grass and salt. But can the system itself, can governance in the Bahamas tolerate 70-year-old leaders? And on top of that, 70-year-old leaders talking as if they ain't going to never retire and leave politics. That is my concern.
But our prime minister is vibrant and competent. I don't like how you pause and be quiet when I say things like that. No.
I just feel that the weight of your words are sufficient.
I just don't like how you pause when I say things like that. Our prime minister is competent and vibrant.
Just because the man could junk canoe for 3 minutes in front of a camera doesn't mean that he could do 3 laps on Bay Street. And perhaps that should be the rite of passage. Can you do 3 whole laps carrying a costume and shaking the cowbells the whole way?
What about inviting third-party leaders to participate, or they shouldn't count? I don't see the likes of a Philip Davis debating the likes of a third party who can't get even 10% of supporters in an election.
Okay, see, so what happens in the United States is that to get on the debate stage, right? And see, we all believe that the United States is just a two-party system. There could only be two parties. That's not true. What's true is that they devise this little mechanism that to be able to get to the debate stage, like you have to get at least 11%, I think, of the votes at the primary stage, at some early stage in voting, to qualify to get on the debate stage, right? And that's a mechanism that they've used to diminish the visibility and capacity of what we call third parties, alternates to the Democrats and Republicans, because the political culture relies on this illusion that there could only be two parties. And that's why these types of interrogations of U.S. politics are so helpful for Bahamian politics, because, look right there. Our political class also survives and relies on the illusion that there could only be two parties, right? So when you say you can't imagine the likes of a Davis, KC, esteemed lawyer, and I wouldn't say necessarily orator, but his legal career proves that to be so, good orator, that he would not, or you could not see him debating the likes of a little pyong third party leader. It's too bad. Democracy calls for it. He is equal among equals. You don't get to say, I am the prime minister.
That diminishes the prime minister's seat, the leadership race seat?
No, it diminishes the integrity of the Westminster system and democracy. That's what it does. It reinforces the plantocracy and the idea that there's an elite, and the elite should not be questioned. Anybody who is vying and has a party that is registered should be allowed to debate. The only question I would have is, what if they are independents? See, because imagine now you had a debate, right? And you had a Christie and an Ingram. And then you tell a DePuch and a Wells, Tennyson Wells and Pierre DePuch, who ran as independents, that they can't come on the debate stage. So that would be considered like an attempt to silence people, because surely those two gentlemen have the weight, the social weight, to debate at that level. So no, you can't say, well, only the two parties could debate if we're going to have a debate. It has to be open to all parties. Hmm. You know, when you're in charge, you could make up any kind of rule to protect your ability to maintain that state of being in charge.
There is a push by some, it's a small minority, just loud, that we need to embrace some type of republic type system. And republics type system where we vote for leader. But I said we can't even manage the system we have here as yet. We haven't matured enough to interrogate it, to manage, to operate, but to adopt an entirely new system mm-hmm. and go through the mechanism of training, learning, understanding, appreciating, and expect to catch up overnight. I just don't see it happening.
No, I think the former part of your statement is very important. You don't understand the system you have right now, but you're certain that another system will be better. We don't know if we're experiencing these issues because the system is not being managed properly or the system in and of itself is dysfunctional, right? So I agree with you in the latter part. What is the sake of adopting a new system if you have not identified the ways in which you have bastardized the old system? Because surely you will repeat history and lose sight of the tenets of the new system. You was reading that text, eh?
I was reading the text.
Yeah, I had to push the phone away when I read the text. I said, let me push the phone away and give it to Mr. Newry. But my biggest concern is that 70-plus-year-old people insist, they refuse to give up power.
70 is not old.
Are you a Bible man?
Well, you 70 times. You got 77.
70. 3 score and 10. After that, nothing else is promised. So you telling me, and see, that's what I love about
70
it.
70 is not old.
All of these Bible, I didn't say it was old. All of these Bible people, all of these people that insisted we must turn our head to the Bible whenever they need us to, right? For the political rhetoric. If they say nothing is promised after 3 score and 10 and I must vote on you, even God say, don't vote on yourself, buddy.
You just trying to say my prime minister old. But no. He's young and vibrant and competent, and he could lead another 25 years.
Here's the question. Has Brave Davis Casey, the Honorable Prime Minister, proven to you that he can cause or compel the members of his cabinet, the members of his party, the members of his party in the House, his party supporters, public servants, tourists, ordinary citizens, residents, has he shown you that he can cause or compel them to discipline themselves?
Has any of our leaders ever done that?
I ask you that.
Yeah. Did you try to get this be narrow-minded when it comes to one leader?
I just want to say, is Brave old enough and strong enough to pull any of his cabinet colleagues over to him, put them over his knee, and spank them? Can he do it?
It's going to be an interesting election. You believe it's going to be an early election? Let's talk about that before we go. You have 2 minutes. What do you think? We'll put it on record.
Well, I tell you what, Brave making the battle cry so early.
It is early.
Yeah. I think Brave would be a fool to call an early election.
You see the commercials on social media advertising. It's a campaign started. Can the FNM afford to campaign early?
I mean,
they might have no choice.
If the FNM understood that they don't need money to campaign, then sure. If they understood that they don't need to campaign, all they need to do is work. If you were working as an opposition, if you were interrogating state action, not just in the House when you could get up and say anything, but by bringing people together, doing research, writing reports and papers, and then bringing that information to the public in a cohesive and cogent way that people could understand, you wouldn't need to campaign. You wouldn't need to go into campaign mode. You wouldn't need to rush to figure out what you could do, because you'd already be doing it.
This text says he's the funniest person in the world, Erin Green. Anyway, she is very funny. She's be on the spot, right? Comic.
Shadow.
Anyway, this has been Guardian Radio here with C.A. Nuri. Thank you very much, Erin Green. We shall be back tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.